Hello and welcome to Inside the Auditorium Season 3. Please welcome my next guest, who is Stephen Licence, Group Chief Internal Auditor at Legal & General. Stephen will talk to us about the insurance industry and what makes internal audit so important, and for all the specialist areas within insurance. Welcome, Stephen. Stephen, and welcome to Inside the Auditorium today. Perhaps you can let everybody know who you are and where you're coming from.
Hi, Hazel. Good morning, and many thanks for inviting me onto the podcast. Yeah, I'm Stephen Licence, and I'm currently the Group Chief Internal Auditor here at Legal & General Group.
And I know that we've known each other for a very long time. I think you were probably one of my first placements I made in internal audit when you was at Talbot Underwriting. But perhaps you could explain of how you got in, why you went into internal audit specifically within insurance, and why you've stayed there.
Yeah, absolute pleasure. You're right, Hazel. I think we've known each other for about 15 plus years, maybe a bit longer than that, actually. And you've been involved in doing a lot of recruitment in the businesses that I've been involved in. So, yeah, let me tell you a little bit about my story. So I started my career in internal audit just over 30 years ago. So have been in internal audit for a long time. And I started my career in the public sector, actually, as part of what was the Department of Social Security. I joined the department as a graduate. I graduated in economics, and really it was my first job outside of university, first formal job. But the job that I was recruited for, whilst quite interesting, was really not a career job, I would say. It wasn't really a career. I was actually adjudicating on disability benefits, which was actually quite interesting from a social perspective. But I knew it was a short-term gig, and I needed and wanted to do something else. And being very blunt about it, I knew that from a colleague that if I went and did some time in internal audit, I was pretty much guaranteed to get a promotion. And at that time in my life, that was very, very attractive. I didn't know anything about internal audit. To be quite frank, internal audit 30 years ago is not what it is today. So I went along as a 20-something being interviewed about something I didn't really know a lot about. But clearly they recognised some characteristics in me that thought that I would be worth taking a chance on and joined internal audit. And that's when I qualified as an internal auditor. At that time, it was the path chosen for internal auditors in government to do the Chartered Institute of Internal Audit exams, as it is now. I did that, and they sponsored me through that, and I got the promotion that I was after. But very soon after that, I knew that, again, probably needed to make a move. So after about 3 or 4 years, doing some really interesting stuff. Having done my degree in economics, I was very much interested in social policy and how government worked. And the team I worked in at the Department of Social Security was very focused on budgeting and business planning. And therefore, it was just really very interesting for me and gave me some great insight. I then moved to my first kind of break into the private sector to work for a company called Guardian Rail Exchange. And that is now a company that no longer exists. It's part of the Global AXA Group. But I really cut my teeth, actually. I did every job in internal audit other than the later year career job. So I was a junior internal auditor, then became a senior internal auditor. I think I was a principal internal auditor at some point, and then became an audit manager. So got promoted and worked my way through the ranks, learning a lot about general insurance, how that worked, both personal lines and commercial lines, and also a bit of life insurance and also a bit of asset management. So that was all very interesting. I eventually, as part of the AXA Group, ended up being the audit manager for what was PPP Healthcare, which is now AXA Health. So again, adding to my bow in terms of other parts of insurance that I started to get some insight into. I decided to have a bit of a break, actually, from insurance. I went to work for the London Stock Exchange as an audit consultant. I spent 5 years at the exchange. This was a time when the London Stock Exchange was a mutual organisation, and certainly a lot smaller than it is now. And that's where I really got exposure to IT audit, big style really, and qualified, got my CISA qualification as when I was working at the stock exchange, and found that enormously valuable. It was still part of my learning and development, part of my career really, getting the badges to kind of move on to the next stage. But learned a huge amount about the equity markets, learned a huge amount about derivatives markets and an enormous amount about IT. So gave me enough really to be a little bit dangerous in that category really. And I've taken that skill and that knowledge all the way through my career. After that, I went into the Lloyd's insurance markets, actually. That's where I met you, Hazel. I did work for a company at the time called Talbot Underwriting. It's now part of the enormous AIG group. But at the time, it was a relatively modest-sized Lloyd's managing agent. But very interesting. I mean, I loved that job, to be quite honest. I learned a huge amount about the Lloyd's insurance market, how it operates, the type of risks that are being written in Lloyd's. Absolutely loved it. Worked with some fantastic people who were genuinely global experts in the fields that they were underwriting in. So really enjoyed that. But again, after a couple of years, it was time to move on. And I worked for a Lloyd's broker, still in the Lloyd's market, but on the other side of the fence, a company called Alexander Forbes, which were eventually taken over by a company called Lockton, one of the world's largest privately owned insurance brokers. And again, seeing and managing a team, actually, that was my first exposure to global internal audit, because I was responsible for the UK, for Latin America and the Asia operations of Lockton, as it was at the time. Again, I moved on after a couple of years to then work for the RSA Insurance Group. And I stayed there quite a while. I stayed there for 7 years, eventually becoming the chief auditor for their emerging markets business. And that's when I got a real exposure to global insurance. Actually, I had teams in 10 countries around the world. My teams were auditing in 21 countries around the world, across Asia, Latin America, Eastern Europe, and the Middle East as well. And so did an awful amount of traveling. I was probably traveling, seeing my teams. About 70% of what I was doing was being out, flying across the world, seeing some really nice places, and meeting lots and lots of great people, actually. And that gave me an enormous insight into just cultural difference and how that affected our industry and some of the nuances in how we operate or how insurance is operated around the world. So that was an incredibly interesting job. Again, thoroughly enjoyed my time at RSA, and then got the opportunity, actually, to come to Legal & General Group as the Group Chief Internal Auditor. And I've been here 10 years now, so quite some time. A lot has happened in those last 10 years, both to the internal audit function and to the business itself. And this is about kind of running a reasonably large size internal audit team in one of the UK's largest financial services group. So yes, that's a potted history of my career, Hazel.
Tell me, you've mentioned that obviously you have moved around, in the specialty markets, emerging markets, life general, etc. How easy is an internal auditor if you're working, let's say, in the specialty markets? Is it to transfer your skills into other insurance disciplines?
Relatively easy, I would say. And I often encourage people who are thinking to make career moves to really consider the broad financial services sector, particularly in insurance, because there's not just general insurance and life insurance. There's the whole Lloyd's market. There's the whole specialty reinsurance sector. Now, whilst many organisations are really looking for people with that discipline and that background, the bottom line is there isn't enough people with that specialism and skill. But if you have what I would say are the core characteristics of a great internal auditor, I think the opportunities to learn and grow and for people to want you to learn and grow are significant. And I think it provides people with a much more depth to their CVs if they can do that. I think it's relatively easy. I have recruited people who have different skill sets into my team as well. They're not always life insurance background people, but also come from a general insurance background as well. And also from different disciplines. It's not just about internal audit. So, relatively easy, and I would definitely encourage it.
Yeah, sure. Because I do understand as well, especially, you know, you're a big advocate. You have quite a number of your teams moving internally for internal mobility. One thing that I have noticed myself over the last year, especially maybe more in this pension space, is that Consumer Duty has also, although it's just not being designed to banking, it's also been designed to insurance. Could you just explain a little bit about that?
Yeah, so this is had an enormous impact on insurance, as you say, as well as the retail banks. And really, it stems from the Financial Conduct Authority, one of the UK's two regulators, wanting financial services firms to place a lot more emphasis on how they treat their customers and ensuring that the outcomes that customers receive are fair, irrespective of people's backgrounds. And very much a cornerstone to some of that regulation is around, particularly around vulnerable customers, where some of our products are quite complex. Some of the processes around it are not always easy to understand. The objective of the Consumer Duty is to make sure that we, as an industry, make sure it is clear to people the products that they're buying, ensuring that they provide value for money, and that we can demonstrate that. It's not just about us saying that. That we can clearly demonstrate how those products provide value to those customers and make sure their outcomes are fair. And that requires us to do a lot of monitoring, that requires us to do a lot of analysis, but it also puts an emphasis on internal audit because, like most financial services companies, the UK regulators take internal audit very, very seriously and often require and request that the third line of defence not only provides the board and senior management with assurance that things are being done, but also provide that assurance to the regulators directly. So me and my team over the last couple of years have done a substantial amount of work in terms of how the business is prepared for the implementation of Consumer Duty, the management information that's being prepared and presented to our board, making sure that is fair and balanced and complete. And really helping, actually, where we are able to get advice and counsel from others using our co-source relationship to do a bit of compare and contrast. And what we've done, hopefully, is put Legal & General in a very good position in terms of compliance with the Consumer Duty regulations.
And just in terms of sort of now everybody's buying their products, whether it's your car insurance, pensions, whatever, with online, you know, especially using companies, you know, like GoCompare and what have you. How important then is the insurance industry involved in now auditing third parties? Because it seems that a third party has another, you know, a fourth party and things like that.
Oh, hugely, Hazel. It's a really very hot topic, actually, in terms of how organisations use third and, as you say, fourth and potentially fifth parties. There was a piece of regulation from our other regulator in the UK, the Prudential Regulation Authority, that made it clear that across the industry, actually, and insurance was no better or worse than anywhere else at managing third parties and being exposed to the risks associated with third parties and fourth parties. So going beyond the walls of our own organisation and really requiring us to make sure that we have the right monitoring, the right oversight, the right MI, to ensure that any third party that we have a relationship with provides the same level of things like security, same level of ongoing availability of services, as if it was being done by us ourselves. So the regulation goes beyond the boundaries of the organisation. And that means that we're responsible for providing assurance over that as well, whether that be around IT risk, whether that be around third-party outsourcing or other services that may be being provided by other companies. So a proportion of my plan, and I'm pretty sure most financial services chief auditors' plans, includes providing assurance over those third parties, not just is the organisation itself overseeing them, but is actually what's going on in those third parties what we expect to see, and that they're being well controlled. So the control environments at our third parties and our fourth parties needs to be as good as if it was being done internally. And if not, then we need to provide some guidance on how that's improved.
And in terms of the technology then for internal audit or IT audit, I know that you very much now have quite strong subject matter experts, especially around cyber. How current is IT within insurance organisations around maybe data analytics and new technologies such as AI coming up the curb?
Enormously, Hazel. I mean, it impacts insurance businesses as well as other financial services activities as well. And legal in general is no different to any other organisation. What I would say is one of the benefits of a company like Legal in General is we've been around an awfully long time, nearly 200 years. Some of our IT, whilst not 200 years old, is quite old and needs to be quite old because many of our customers have been with us an awfully long time. That's one of the differences between maybe banks and insurers. People come to us early on in their lives to save with us or look to take out pensions with us, and they expect us to be here till the end of their lives. So that can be 40, 50, 60, 70 years, depending on how long people live. And therefore, the data, the information that we keep has to be on our systems. And it's increasingly expensive and difficult to maintain those systems and to keep them going. So all financial services are going through a revolution, if you like, in modernising the applications with which they're kind of working with. And that includes using AI technology going forward. Now, we are very cautious as an industry about AI, and rightly so. You know, there's enormous benefits and huge opportunities being brought to us using AI. But because we are regulated, because people need us to be here for the long term, quite rightly our stakeholders and our regulators want to be cautious and want us to be careful. But because we're starting to use AI and because we're starting to think about how that may benefit us and ultimately our customers, we as an internal audit function need to have the right skills and capabilities to be able to audit that. And we're starting our journey. We're keeping pace with the developments in the organisation and outside as well. So you're right, the skill set required to do that is new. The risks are definitely new. But we have a very strong role to play in making sure that the rollout of that technology is done safely and securely, and we understand what's happening. And as well as being an opportunity for internal audit, I'm a huge, huge advocate of how potentially AI can be used to improve the way that we provide assurance. And I'm incredibly excited about that opportunity. And I've already started with my team to deploy tools around using AI to help us do our job better.
And I know your CEO is actually from a banking industry as well. How transferable then, or, you know, if I was saying to somebody within the say, financial services industry from IT audit or retail banking, you know, or financial risk to come into internal audit or come to insurance, how would you, what would be the sell there in terms of maybe economic growth?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. Our recently appointed CEO, Antonio Simoes, came from Santander, Banco Santander, and prior to that was something like 12 years at HSBC. So clearly at the most senior level, those skills are absolutely transferable. For Antonio, it's obviously his strategic thinking and his ability to manage a large organisation. But like Antonio, many of us are very excited about insurance for a number of reasons, and you hit exactly on one of those reasons, which is that insurance, actually, when you step back, is a force for good. And it's a force for good for many reasons. And one of those is because people provide us with their savings and their investments, and they want us to do something useful with those savings and investments, whether it be pensions or their life insurance policies. They pay us premiums or they pay into their pensions. And we have to do something because we're making promises to people that we're going to be here and we're going to pay out on either their pensions or in the worst case scenario, if anything happens to them. And therefore, that gives us an enormous opportunity to do good with the money that we actually have, that we need to have to pay those claims and those pensions in the future. And some of the ways that companies like Legal & General does this is by investing in UK infrastructure. And some of the major infrastructure projects that Legal & General has been involved in since I've been here have transformed towns and cities across the UK for the good. And if you, Hazel, if you go to Cardiff and you walk out of the railway station, hopefully you'll be quite impressed with what's been done in Cardiff over the last 5 years, the beautiful plaza, the new office buildings, the new shops and some accommodation. That has all been funded by Legal & General and through the pension contributions that our policyholders make. And if you go to Manchester, if you go to Newcastle, if you go to Leeds, if you go to parts of London, you will see exactly the same thing, which is our balance sheet being used to help growth in the UK and outside the UK as well. We do similar activities in the United States as well. But really using that money as a force for good and things like urban regeneration or investing in projects that have a social impact, so ESG impact, so renewable energy. Legal & General has been a huge investor in those projects and will continue to do so. One, because that is part of our DNA, that we think that is the right thing to do with our policyholders' investments and their assets, but also because it makes good returns for the company and our shareholders. So insurance, whilst we don't talk about it very loudly, is certainly a force for good and has transformed cities around the country for the better.
Sure. And I must talk about in terms of, and if you could probably give us a bit of a idiot's guide for people that don't know about actuarial. I mean, it's something that's here. It's a skill set that's very hard to sort of recruit for because it's such a specialist area. Maybe you could explain to us what actuaries actually do and why we audit them. And yeah.
Yeah, so some of my best friends are actuaries. More than happy to explain, Hazel. So it is very much a profession within insurance, both general insurance and life insurance. Although the role of the actuaries in general insurance, so in motor, household, commercial, is a little bit different to what actuaries do in a life insurance company. But essentially, actuaries are mathematicians mostly. They use their skills to predict using actuarial models and data to help inform us and give us a view of what's going to happen in the future using sophisticated models. Now, it is a very technical and very skilled area, and it has its own profession. The Institute of Actuaries, a bit like the Chartered Institute of Internal Auditors and the Institute of Chartered Accountants, has its own kind of a code of ethics, its own professional standards, its own examinations, and they are really, really tough. And what you get with a qualified actuary is somebody who is very good at maths, very similar to the quant skills that are recruited for in the banks. But really, the role of the actuaries within insurance companies, as I say, is to try and put a view on what is going to happen tomorrow financially in today's money. And in life insurance, that tends to be about how long people are going to live. Now, whilst most people have a bit of a view based on their lifestyle about how long they live, and we hope that everybody lives a long and happy life, there is an enormous amount of data about across the whole population, on average, how long people will live. And our actuaries use that data to model potentially, if you have a large number of people, how many people will live, how many people will die, roughly what age they will live, roughly what age they will die. And as a result of that, we can predict with a reasonable level of accuracy, it's called judgment as well as anything else, what the impact may be on our assets, the assets that we need to grow, and the liabilities that we have, which is we have to pay out people's pensions for the long term, or if they unfortunately pass away, we will pay out on their life insurance. And so the actuaries play a crucial role in allowing us to understand how those numbers work. But we also need the actuaries to produce our financial statements or contribute to our financial statements. So many of the assumptions that they make, they feed directly into our actuarial results, and therefore they contribute to the amount of reserves that we have to hold so that we're able to pay people's pensions and life insurance long into the future. Works very similarly in general insurance. Actuaries are looking at things like catastrophe risk and modelling roughly if there is fire risk. So the classic one is in the US. We've all seen the fires in California. Actuaries will model the likelihood of those fires and the potential losses that those fires will bring to individual companies. So whatever, actuaries are absolutely key to the success of insurance companies. And when they get it wrong, it can go catastrophically wrong. But mostly it goes right, and they're very prudent. And therefore, and through regulation, insurance companies have to hold significant reserves to make sure we have enough money to pay our liabilities going forward. But the actuaries play a fundamental role in that. So what's that got to do with us as internal auditors? Well, we have to be able to audit those models, and they are very complex. They are often very big, and they are often very detailed. And therefore, it's really key for me to be able to provide assurance over the risks to this group and to the risks to all the insurance companies I work for. So we need to have a certain level of capability in the team to be able to do that. So I have four or five qualified actuaries on my team. Excuse me. They don't always do audits of actuarial activity, but predominantly we're using them to challenge the actuaries and challenge the controls that should be in place over the actuarial process. So controls over models, controls over the use of expert judgment, and how those models and how those expert judgments feed into our financial results.
Sure. And I would say then that the job of an actuarial auditor is probably one of the most interesting, because assuming that, in what you've just said, AI is will play a massive part in that going forward. Also as well, ESG in terms, of predicting climate change and risk and things like that. But also as well, we spoke earlier about new products that are coming into market, like the weight loss jabs and etc. Because we do know that this is just such a hard to fill area, and there aren't many sort of actuaries that want to get into internal audit, what would you say to an actuary of why it would be good to sort of transfer your skills and come into internal audit, whether that would be for a couple of years or not?
I think that's exactly it, Hazel. I think, like many professions, the internal audit profession is a broad church, and people join internal audit for many reasons. Some, like me, stay for a long time because they enjoy the role and what it provides. But it's also a great opportunity for people who are non-career auditors to experience what else goes on in the organisation. I'm sure many of your other participants have said that one of the most fantastic things about internal audit is just the breadth of areas that you get to be involved in. And whilst our actuaries are involved very often in the technical actuarial aspects of it, it's not exclusive to that. And they get a broad experience of how the organisation runs beyond the actuarial profession and the actuarial area of expertise. And have a better understanding, I think, of risk and control to take with them on the next part of their journey. So we've been very lucky to have people come into the function and actually enjoy internal audit. And why wouldn't you? For all the reasons I just said. And many of the actuaries who join us, whilst may not necessarily see it as a long-term initial career move, very often start to think about, well, potentially this might be the next step in my career. Because at the end of the day, an actuary is an actuary. And unless you're completely wedded to just doing an actuarial role, there are many roles in both legal and general and across the insurance industry that actuaries are extremely capable of doing, because they very often are extremely clever. They understand in a lot of detail how an insurance company works, how the financials work, and what impacts them, and therefore bring this huge skill set. And using that skill set in internal audit for either a short period of time or a longer period of time is just fantastic. I think it complements the actuarial profession remarkably well. And certainly the actuaries who I've recruited and worked with over many years have always gone away thinking it's only been beneficial to their career to take some time within an internal audit function.
Sure. And, you know, just sort of keeping on to the talent, I mean, if we can sort of talk about the latest regulations or what's important at the moment, I think you mentioned about Solvency UK. Maybe you can tell us, you know, what's going to be hot for 2025.
Yeah, you're right, Hazel. I won't go into too much detail, but, you know, one of the changes that's occurred now the UK is sitting outside the European Union. Is that's allowed the UK regulators to look again at what the capital requirements, how much money we need to hold in case something really, really bad happens. And the Prudential Regulation Authority has spent a long time considering how what was Solvency II when we were in the European Union could possibly change now we're outside of the European Union. And there's been some technical changes that have come into force that allows insurance companies to a little bit more freedom to invest in some of the things we talked about, some of the things in infrastructure that we weren't allowed to invest in before because they were considered not to be useful assets. So there's been some change in the regulation around what they call the matching adjustment and the benefit we get from the matching adjustment. That allows, and some of your listeners may have heard it, mentioned in the news around how this government wants to make financial services be part of that growth story. And some of the changes that have been introduced as part of Solvency UK will definitely help to improve the level of growth in the UK because we will now be allowed to invest in a broader set of assets that we weren't able to invest in previously.
Sure. And are the skills sort of quite transferable from Solvency II to Solvency UK, for an example? Or what do you think are skill sets that, you know, the challenges that we're currently facing for internal audit within insurance at the moment?
Yeah, the skill sets are very transferable, Hazel, whether it be the actuarial skill set or the asset management skill set, to be honest. The thing about assets is not all assets are the same and therefore it requires, again, a lot of skill and judgment to make sure that we only invest in those assets that are within our risk appetite and that we understand and that we can predict the cash flows from. And therefore, that requires an enormous amount of first line review, second line oversight and also third line assurance. The board isn't going to want us to invest in asset classes or types of assets either that are outside of our risk appetite or don't meet the criteria that the board considers is reasonable and safe. So they really are looking to us to use our broad skills, and that includes actuarial asset management and insurance, to provide assurance over that topic. But in terms of regulation, very, very similar. It's about how much the organisation needs to keep in case there is a catastrophic event and how those assets can be deployed to make sure we can continue to pay claims and people's pensions if certain scenarios occur.
So, and tell me, what sort of kept you working within insurance then, you know, within your career?
I think, Hazel, it's just the sheer variety. I mean, when we talk about insurance, but we're not talking about the same thing, you know, sometimes it's physical, like you say, car insurance, and I buy car insurance, household insurance, pet insurance, all those things. I've worked in all of those areas as part of my career, very, very different to looking at oil tankers and ships sailing around the world and cargo and specie, fine art, and all that kind of stuff. Very, very different to insuring my Labrador. But requires an enormous skill and capability to do that. And both in the life insurance market as well, again, not just the insurance product, but all of the asset management that sits behind that. All of that is just incredibly interesting. There's never a dull day, really, in terms of not being able to learn something. I learn something about this industry and how it works pretty much on a daily basis when my team come and talk to me about the work that they've done. Very often I'm saying, OK, right, start from the beginning. How does this work? What is it supposed to be doing? And tell me why. And I just find that whole daily learning process just really engaging. And that's why I've done it for so long. Every day is genuinely a school day. But it makes a difference. And that would be the other thing, Hazel, I would say, that the reason why I have stayed in state and financial services, and in particular in insurance in all of its different guises, is we actually are a force for good. We actually make people's lives better. We're there for them when they lose their loved ones. We're there for them if they crash their car. We're there for them when they retire to make sure that they're happy and have a safe and useful retirement as they possibly can. And as a result of that, we're able to invest, as I say, those assets to make society a better place. We're able to invest in places that the government isn't able to invest in, and we're able to do it quicker and when we get permission to do it through, that can be a real force for good. And that's why I continue to work in the insurance sector.
So, I know that you're the chair of the ECIIA Insurance Committee. Is there any other sort of professional accomplishments that you're most proud of?
Yeah, so I did that. I'm no longer chair of the committee, but I did that for a number of years, and I was a member of the committee for a number of years as well. And again, thoroughly enjoyed my time doing that. That was a great opportunity to with peers across Europe, actually, the likes of Generali, AXA, Unica, and we got together to we did two things, actually, and one of them I was really proud of in my career, which was there are many codes of conduct and how to do internal audit, but there wasn't really a specific one for insurance companies, and risks in insurance are quite unique and different to other sectors, and me and my colleagues at the time sat down and wrote a code specifically for the insurance sector so that we could basically promulgate best practice across insurance across Europe. And insurance companies are many different sizes and shapes across Europe to very, very small insurance companies with only one or two internal auditors in them, up to the likes of Allianz and AXA, who have hundreds of internal auditors. But what we were aiming to do is develop a code that applied to everybody and that everybody could use to raise the bar, really. And we were supported very much by the European regulator, IOPA, at the time, to do this because they were desperate for a standard with which they could measure the quality of internal audit and the quality of internal audit functions across Europe, whether they'll be small functions or large functions. So that took some time. Doing things by committee often takes a lot of time. And what you come to realise, Hazel, is that your assumptions about how things operate, how organisations are structured, how governance work in different organisations is often wrong, actually. And assumptions need to, if you write things like that, it has to apply to everybody. So it was a detailed process. It was done really well. And I really enjoyed doing it.
Fantastic. And as we come to a conclusion on our podcast today, is there anything that you would have told your younger self, or any advice that you would give to anybody in insurance audit at all?
Yeah, no, I would give my younger self many pieces of advice, some of which I took and some of which I didn't take. But I would always encourage people to carry on learning and take their learning really seriously. And that's a message that I often give to my team and people who I have coached over the years, which is, and really to take your learning and development very seriously and hold yourself accountable for that. I mean, very often, depending on where you are in your life and what you're doing, it's very difficult to prioritise learning and development. But it's so important to continue to do that at every stage of your career and force yourself to be accountable for that. I would also encourage people, whilst looking to get technical skills, not to ignore soft skills development and training and learning. Very often we talk about, people need to have high EQ in this profession as well as IQ. And I'm a very, very strong believer in that. It's great to be very clever and smart, but it's also important to have a really strong level of empathy and sympathy when you're doing this role. This is about relationships. Successful internal audit is about developing really great relationships so that when you have to have a difficult conversation, you can do that with stuff in the bank in terms of understanding and people's understanding of where you come from. And I think it's that skill that is very often not well tuned by certainly younger people in their careers. And I think whilst people clamber for the IQ qualifications, whether it be chartered this or certified that, making sure there's a balance between that and those EQ skills around being empathetic and showing understanding. They pay dividends massively, and I strongly would advise people to make sure they understand that topic and make sure they utilise some of the skills that you can deploy to make sure you are a high EQ person.
Oh, fantastic. Well, look, thank you very much for your time today. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you.
Likewise, Hazel.